You have reached the Every Little Thing help.
We're interrupting our regularly scheduled programming to give you an urgent flamingo update. On the line, we have our flamingo correspondent.
Hi, how are you?
This is flamingo biologist Felicity Arango from the American Museum of Natural History. You heard her on our Do Not Underestimate the Flamingo episode, where we outline why the flamingo is the most badass creature on the planet.
Yeah, they're pretty badass, yep.
I appreciate you taking our urgent call today.
Sure.
I don't know if you're on social media, but on Twitter and Instagram, there has been a flamingo event in the last week.
Yes. I saw it. It was, you know, brought to my attention by a few people.
It looks like a picture from a flamingo crime scene.
Yeah.
There's two adult flamingos and a baby flamingo. And one of the adults looks like it's attacking the other one. It's like drilling its beak into the head of the other flamingo. There's this red bloody substance coming out, and that is dripping down the other flamingo's face into the baby's mouth.
Right. It looks like that, but actually that's not what's happening.
Here's what Felicity said. This wasn't a scene from a flamingo snuff film. It was actually a sweet moment where a flam mom and dad were feeding their chick. And that bloody substance is actually flamingo baby formula. Adult flamingos produce it in an organ in their body called the crop,
which is a part of the digestive system. It's like a pouch. And that has some cells that are rich in proteins and fats and vitamins and pigments. And they form this liquid that we call crop milk.
And adult flamingos regurgitate that crop milk to their baby flamingos. So no skulls were punctured. That was just a flamingo drooling its crop milk down the head of another flamingo into the baby's mouth. And it's blood-colored for the same reason that flamingo feathers are pink. Flamingos are what they eat.
They're eating things like brine shrimp and algae and things that have these carotenoids that are the building blocks of this pink coloration, which also is what makes their feathers pink. And that's what makes this crop milk red.
I think this is just another reason that flamingos are the most badass creature, by the way. Their baby formula looks like blood.
Yeah.
Felicity, here's the thing that doesn't make sense to me about this picture. Why does the flamingo on top have to run the crop milk down the other flamingo's head into the baby flamingo's mouth? Like, that's like mom pouring a bowl of cereal down dad's head.
Yeah, it's pretty strange. And I've been wondering about that myself, because most of the time when I've seen this behavior in the field, it's just one adult that's feeding its chick. So I'm not really sure what's going on here. I'm assuming that both of those in the photo are the parents of the chick, so they're both trying to feed its chick. But yeah, I've never seen that myself.
I mean, do both parents nurse?
Yeah, so both parents, they both build the nest. Once the female lays an egg, they both incubate, so they take turns. The chick is born. Both male and female will continue to feed the chick until it's old enough that it can feed itself.
This seems more equal than most couples I know. Human couples.
Yeah, there's quite an equal situation there with raising their young.
Just another reason to appreciate the flamingo. If you want to see this picture, go to our Twitter or Instagram at ELT Show. After the break, a question about the mysterious drugs that let you sleep through your body being sliced to bits. A few weeks back, we asked you to vote for an upcoming show. You could vote through the Spotify app, or you could call us. The results are in, and like many elections, it was complicated. The winner of the popular vote on the Spotify app was Dreaming. But the winner of the Electoral College vote, the topic that got the most calls on the ELT helpline, was Anesthesia. So this editorial board decided to endorse two candidates. We'll be doing both shows. Today, anesthesia.
Hey, this is Paul from New Bern, North Carolina. I had surgery a few years back, and something kind of strange happened related to it, so I would love to hear an episode on anesthesia. Again, it's Paul in New Bern, North Carolina. Thanks.
Hello.
Hey, Paul from New Bern, North Carolina. It's Flora from Every Little Thing, Hamlet of Gimlet, province of Spotify.
Hello. How are you, Flora?
So what is New Bern like?
New Bern is a town of about 30,000. It's a place where two rivers join together, and then that big old river flows down into the Pamlico Sound and into the Bogue Sound. There's also about one lawyer for every, like, two people in town, because there's a lot of courthouses.
What do you do?
I'm an Episcopal priest.
Really?
Yep.
Should I not curse in front of you?
I mean, you won't catch me doing that on a recording, but I'm a fan of the F-bomb myself, so
I'm not going to get, like, smoted or something.
No. I don't. I can put in a good word to keep you from getting smoted.
So you said in your message you had surgery a few years back.
Yeah.
Is everything okay?
Everything's great. I had my appendix out.
Tell me the story.
So I handwrite my sermons most of the time, and had been at my dining room table and had finished a sermon. It was late. I went to stand up, and that lower right side near my hip was just like, man, that doesn't feel right. The next morning was a Friday morning, and I woke up, and it still hurt. And my wife said, you've got to go to urgent care. Like, you got to go. So she was like, you're having your appendix out. I guarantee you, you're going to have your appendix out.
I guess she was right.
Yeah.
When you went to the hospital, were you nervous?
A little, yeah. Yeah, I never had surgery before. I'd never been under. I was just a little nervous. I'd never done that before.
So what was the anesthesia experience like?
So I had an IV in, and in the pre-op room, the anesthesia nurse comes in, and she, like, injected something into the IV and said, this will likely cause some amnesia so that you won't remember anything. And she said, in fact, you probably won't even remember meeting me.
Whoa.
Yeah.
What's the last thing you remember before you were put under?
I remember somebody saying, he's going to take a little nap now.
He, not even you.
Right. Not even like, happy dreams or, yeah. It was like, he's going to take a little nap now. And like, boom, I was out.
Okay, so you said in your message that something weird happened. Do tell.
So I have the surgery. I'm waking up from the surgery, and it was in the middle of basketball conference tournament time, right? And so I remember I asked about the basketball game, and then I said, I really want some chili cheese fries. And the crazy part was, I don't like chili cheese fries. I like my fries crispy, and you put chili and cheese on it, and they immediately become soggy, and that is not my thing.
I mean, when was the last time you had had chili cheese fries when your appendix was in?
Couldn't tell you.
It's almost like you'd had a brain transplant.
Yeah. So I woke up and I said, I really want some chili cheese fries. And there's this other nurse with me named Belinda who, like, stopped what she was doing and turned and looked at me and said, that's so weird. We were talking about chili cheese fries while we were operating on you.
Do you have any memory of them talking about it?
No.
So mysterious.
Yeah, it is very mysterious.
What do you want to know?
I want to know, first of all, how I woke up wanting chili cheese fries. And I want to know generally how anesthesia works.
I think we can help with that.
That would be awesome.
Here to solve the case is Kate Leslie.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, Kate.
who has a little bit of experience with this subject.
I've anesthetized probably 50,000 patients.
50,000, that's a lot. That's this whole city I live in and then some.
Yeah, Kate's a head honcho anesthesiologist. She does research and she practices at the Royal Melbourne Hospital in Australia, where she puts people under, down under.
That is why you picked her, isn't it?
Just to make that one joke.
Just to make that one joke.
So let's start with the basics. There are two kinds of anesthesia. Local is the kind you get at the dentist. It numbs pain. General is the kind that puts you to sleep.
Okay.
And Kate says with general anesthesia, dosage really matters.
So if we give you a tiny bit of a general anesthetic drug, the first thing that happens is that you feel relaxed. So it's a continuum between feeling free from anxiety right to being completely unconscious.
In large doses, you're basically in a coma.
It's exactly like a coma. So sometimes you will have heard of people being in an induced coma, and the drugs that are used for that induced coma are exactly the same as the drugs we use for surgery.
I'm not sure if I'm comforted by that.
Paul, it gets even creepier. Are you ready for this?
I don't know, but go for it.
Your doctors don't know how anesthesia works.
What? I don't even know what to say about that. They know the drugs work, but they're not really sure how.
That is the headline.
Wow.
So we know that anesthetic drugs disrupt the movement of electrical currents across nerve cells, but exactly how that causes unconsciousness is less clear.
General anesthesia basically prevents your nerve cells from being able to communicate with each other.
Okay.
Especially in the brain, where you process all of these sensory signals. So it's not that your body isn't having a sensory response necessarily. It's that the place where you would register that sensory response is shut down for business.
Wow. And how has Kate put like 50,000 people under and she still doesn't know how it works? That's a pretty high level of faith right there.
It is a high level of faith.
It works nearly all of the time, you know, when it's properly administered. And, you know, there's lots of things in life that are unexplained.
As a priest, it's much like me having to explain the Trinity of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. Like, yeah, we know it's there and we trust in it. But at the same time, it's still, you know, a great mystery.
One thing we're not going to let go unexplained is Paul from New Bern and the mystery of the chili cheese fries.
Yes, I am so ready.
Okay, so first of all, Kate was gripped by your tail.
Oh.
I have never heard of anyone waking up with a craving before. Isn't that interesting?
So you're telling me that chili cheese fries are not, like, on supply at the nurse's station. There's no, like, 10 cc's of CCFs.
Not at all.
So Kate says you're most likely to be aware of what's going on around you at the beginning or end of the surgery, when the anesthesia is just kicking in or just wearing off.
It may be that someone was talking about chili cheese fries while you were waking up.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
But there is another possibility that's, like, maybe more disturbing. That cheese fry conversation could have seeped into your mind mid-slice and dice.
What?
There's a small chance that Paul was awake during the surgery. He could have been only just slightly under enough to appear to be unconscious, but was still taking in some memories.
So here is where the science gets as messy as your fingers after chowing on chili cheese fries.
Okay.
Because whether we can make any kind of memory when we're knocked out is a matter of hot scientific debate.
Oh, sweet.
Here's what we know. General anesthesia interferes with your ability to make memories. When you're unconscious, you definitely stop making the memories we're all familiar with. Like, you will remember this phone call.
Oh, for the rest of my life.
But there is some evidence that in an unconscious state, people can form a kind of shadow memory. And I invented that term. And by shadow memory, I mean that you can't really recall it, but if you're prompted in the right way, something comes back.
Oh.
People have done lots of research about giving people suggestions while they're under anesthesia. And there's some evidence that some people are able to take in that information and then use it after the surgery without actually remembering that they heard it during the operation.
That's weird.
Let me tell you about a particular experiment.
Okay.
There was a small study where researchers played pairs of words to people under anesthesia. Bittersweet, ocean water, needle thread, chili cheese.
Right.
Then a few days after the surgery, the researchers went back to those people and showed them single words, some new and some from that list that they'd heard before.
Okay.
And they asked these people to say the first word that came to mind. And what they found is that even though these people had no memory of being played the words, people were significantly more likely to come up with that matched pair to the words they'd heard under anesthesia. It's like they didn't remember hearing the words, but somehow those pairs were stored in their brain.
That's crazy.
It also feels a lot like your chili cheese inception.
Yeah, it does.
You don't remember the potato prattle, but you woke up with cheddar on the header.
Yeah, that is correct.
I also came up with potatoes on the braino. If you have a third, I would love a trifecta here. A holy trinity.
Oh,
of
a holy trinity. Yeah, I'm good with the dad jokes when my kids are around, but I think my superpower is zapped when they're not here.
You need your muses.
I do.
Take home, Paul. It seems like you made a memory that you can't remember.
Yes. That is very weird. And especially weird because it's a food product I never crave otherwise.
Yeah. I mean, and it makes me think if doctors and nurses can implant a chili cheese fry craving, what else could they put in our minds?
Oh, definitely.
I was thinking, like, if I were a nurse or a doctor, there'd be just great temptation to mess with people. Like, recounting the plot of Saw, quoting Hannibal Lecter.
Oh, my Lord, that would be so terrible.
Did you ever get those chili cheese fries?
No, I don't think I ever got the chili cheese fries because I don't like chili cheese fries. That is not my thing.
Do you think your chili cheese fry mystery will make it into a sermon?
Oh, think. I know it will make its way into a sermon. Trinity Sunday is June 7th of this year, and I'm actually going to put myself down to be able to talk about all of this, and I can break the bad news to them that their anesthesiologist didn't really know how it worked, but it worked, and it was a great mystery. And speaking of mysteries, how about that Father, Son, and Holy Ghost thing? Yeah.
Paul, this was so fun.
This was very fun. Thank you, thank you.
If you have a question you can't find an answer to, give us a call, 833-RING-ELT, 833-RING-ELT. And for our upcoming show on dreaming, we're looking for your burning questions. What do you want to know about the science of dreams? Give us a call, 833-RING-ELT.
Every Little Thing is produced by Emily Foreman, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Nicole Pasulka, Doug Barron, Kim Jirik, and Jared Brumbaugh. Our consulting editors are Caitlin Kenny and Jorge Just. Mixed by Dara Hirsch. Scored by Dara Hirsch, Ailey Shaw, and Bobby Lord. When I wake up from a chili cheese fry coma, I find myself craving surgery. Goodbye.
All right, here's the last one, and this one is just from me. So I have had three anesthesiologists in my life, and all three were older men wearing gold chains. Kate, explain it to me. Why?
I have no idea. That's really weird, isn't it? We're not allowed to wear things around our neck in the operating room in Australia. So were they heavy gold chains or light gold chains?
I mean, they were heavy enough that I noticed all of them.
Wow. And how did that make you feel?
Not sleepy.
Well, I'm glad to see that you survived and it wasn't a terminal gold chain event.